Welcome to Psychic Social, brought to you by psychic.co.uk.
On this episode of Psychic Social.
There's me looking at my grandmother in the casket, and I thought, that's my nan. And I heard this voice go, "I'm not there, darling, I'm behind you." Mm. And I looked round, and there was my nan standing there, in full, solid, apparitional form.
Welcome to Psychic Social with me, Oliver Duke, the podcast that explores all things from the psychic and spiritual perspectives, including interviews with famous psychic practitioners, discussions about the afterlife, the paranormal, and much more. So relax and enjoy the show. Today's guest is an international psychic medium, teacher and speaker whose work spans over 30 years. He has brought many people's loved ones through to them during readings he's carried out in his long career, and also given psychic readings to many well-known celebrities. He refers to himself as the universal medium, as he believes when we pass, we go back to the universe. So we'd like to give a very warm welcome to the show, Grant Collier, universal psychic medium. Grant, thank you for joining us on Psychic Social. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you for having me, Oliver. Yeah, I'm doing fine, mate. The sun's shining through my window down here on the southeast coast. So, yeah, I can't ask for a better day through these horrible, horrible times.
Sure, exactly. Well, it is always nice when the sun's shining through all this, isn't it? What are you doing to keep the positive vibes going? Is there anything you can kind of recommend to our listeners that they can do to stay positive as well?
I think communication is the key, isn't it? I think that, you know, anything that you can do, may it be a phone call or interaction through the internet, talking to people is always good. Like Bob Hoskins used to say, it's good to talk. I think, you know, if you are sitting there and you're sitting there looking out the window, nothing's stopping you from going out, taking your shoes off and standing on a fresh blade of grass in your garden or a local park for a little while. You know, the energy is suppressed as it is when you're sitting in four walls, and it can feel like a dungeon. And I think that, you know, even if you can, if you can't or not able to get out, and maybe you are somebody that's sitting in an energy of isolation, where you either are in that area of being over the age of 65, or maybe have some ongoing health conditions that hold you back, meditation is a key. And I think that meditation is a massive area to get you out of that zone. And I think meditation, you know, is something that I've always used through my work and my experiences, that releases you from the boundaries of what's around you on a physical form. So if you aren't able to get out there, guys, and experience the sunshine, or maybe having this energy where you feel like you're worried about stepping out and maybe picking up on this horrible virus that's going around, meditation is what you need. And, you know, I'm a true believer that you can also be proactive in meditation, not closing your eyes and listening to angelic music. I think meditation can be done by, you know, sticking on your favourite album, you know, maybe Queen or something like that, and releasing some of that energy of your momentum, monotonous day of routine. I think that the way I look at it is that keep proactive. You know, I think we have so much potential in us we don't realise as people. We sit there and we wonder, oh, what is it that we can do? I'm not at work doing my normal routine. You know, for me, you know, I'm a spiritual guy, and you know, and my work is very strong and very active all the time with my work and dealing with people. But even I have time out when I need that time out for balance. And in this lockdown, what do? I turn to something within a hobby. I do something. You know, I'm a prolific model maker, so I make models. It gives me a sense of achievement at the end of it, and it breaks the monotony, and it's better than watching sometimes the television all the time.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly, yeah. That's really good advice there. Thank you for that, Grant. Well, I mean, I kind of do a bit of meditation, as the listeners probably already know by now. I mentioned it before, and I do, if you haven't got time to sort of sit there for a while and do meditation as well, I do a little bit of breath work as well. So I might do like box breathing or 478 or something. So, you know, if you guys want to look up box breathing online on YouTube or wherever,
wherever, or 478, they're really good breathing exercises, aren't they, to reduce stress and anxiety.
They are. And do you know something, Oliver? I've watched a lot of videos recently because I wasn't really into the side of that, really. I was more into the meditation. And obviously meditation's about breathing. But the breathing exercises really, really work. And I did some breathing exercises that I watched for a YouTube video only about a month ago, because I actually did go through the COVID and I had a bad time with it, to be quite honest.
Really?
A few weeks back. Yeah, right. Yeah. It didn't last for long, but I panicked and I did think I was going to hospital at one point. Mm-hmm. And I sat out on my balcony at like 2 o'clock in the morning, hoping that this wouldn't go to my chest and give me pneumonia. Mm. And I sat out there and I had my guide, Michael, which we will talk about in a little while, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I did these breathing exercises and I took plenty of menthol sweets and guzzled a lot of Benylin. But the breathing exercises really calmed me down. And I think that a lot of what happens within these things, and not being a medical person, but I think a lot of what happens within the energy of where we are, obviously panic and panic energy does shallow your breathing through these times. Mm. And I think that's in any circumstance. And I think breathing exercises does calm your energy down. You know, what you're doing is you're breathing in vibration within the energy of the vibrations around you. Mm. So I think that within that, it's a great positive for mind, body and soul.
It is, definitely. Well, that's hopefully some good stuff that people can take away and try themselves, you know, hopefully today after listening to this, and make themselves feel a little bit stressed and less stressed, should say, and less anxious about everything at the moment. We want to move into the show now. We wanted you to kind of take us back to the beginning. How did you become a psychic? How did the gift come to you? Was it passed down from a family member, a mother or father? Or did you sort of feel it at a young age?
Well, something was happening to me very, very naturally. I was brought up on a pig farm in North Kent, and I was the youngest of four children, and my house was very haunted back in that time. It was an old kitchen house, cook house, that was for a manor house that was bombed in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. So it did date back to the building I was in was back in the, you know, built in the 1930s. But it was a strange thing because I obviously didn't understand what I had really at a young age, because a lot of people have asked me this, Oliver, when did it really start for you? Well, you can't pinpoint an exact time of when this was, because I think there was no understanding about what I really had at the ages of like five or six. My mother and father had quite a major divorce, and there was a lot going on at that time. And I think that because I was the youngest of four children, and I was that one that had a little bit less understanding because they're all about 5 or 6 years older than me, there was a very confused energy within me. And I can remember being very sensitive as a child and quite shy. But I know that for them years of around about 5, 6 years old, I was starting to experience these energies of visitations. Visitations within sight, visitations within sound, and visitations within being touched. And that was an energy that I couldn't see as a full manifested figure. That was what I used to call them, was the bubble men. Mm-hmm. And they were the only way I can describe what I was experiencing. If you ever seen the film Predator, where the alien goes invisible, mm-hmm. and it's like a clear shadow walking towards you, that's how it looked. So I wasn't really seeing full-formed spirit energy as like a full manifestation. What I was sensing was the energy of these bubble men coming towards me and being touched and being stroked. And I can remember the only real vivid feeling that I had of a lady was the lady that used to visit me every night. Roughly as I started, I suppose it was developing through that 5, 6, 7 years old feel. But I used to constantly get this woman that used to visit me. Now, she used to come more and more of a fuller form or a ghostly apparition. Mm-hmm. So I did see her more, but she was part of the building. She was there in history. She wasn't anything connected with me family, but she was the only one that really stood out. So I suppose in some respects, I suppose she could have been like an early guided figure. I never really quite worked out who she was because I was obviously very young at that time and I didn't ask the questions. I was just very frightened and very fearful of what was going on. And them early recollections of them days was my mum coming into my bedroom and going, "What the hell have you done, Grant? Your bedroom's upside down. It's completely turned upside down." And I had no recollection of it at all. So was this spirit, was this me? I don't know. Maybe a mixture of a lot of things. But all I can say to you is that as time progressed and as I went into my teens, that I started to realise that there was more coming from this gift and I could give weird sort of messages to families and friends and you know, I'd be that sort of freaky kid, if that made sense. But as time went on, I got to 11 years old. My grandmother passed. And my grandmother, this was my dad's mum, and my grandmother was a lovely lady. And I had no knowledge of where she was within herself and the type of person she really was because I was so young. All I can remember was being man and she was lovely. But I could remember when she passed away, my mum went to me, "Would you like to go down and see your nan?" That was a big thing at 11 years old. And I said, "Well, what do you mean, mum?" She said, "Well, would you like to see her at the Chapel of Rest?" And I'm like, "Whoa, I've never experienced seeing a dead body before." And I can remember I saying, "Yes, okay, I'll go." I was a bit apprehensive, a little bit frightened to see my nan in that particular state. So I decided to go and I would like to say goodbye to my grandmother. And I walked down with my mum. And obviously it was very separate because my mother and father wasn't together. So she wanted to say her farewells to her mother-in-law, which had a bit of turbulence within the energy, obviously. And she did really care for her. So she took me down and me and my mum went. It was a very solitude sort of experience, walking into this Chapel of Rest. And there's me looking at my grandmother in the casket. And I thought, that's my nan. And I heard this voice go, "I'm not there, darling. I'm behind you." And I looked around and there was my nan standing there in full, solid, apparitional form. And I was like, wow. And she only was there for a split second and she was gone. And after that experience, I noticed that suddenly there was this burst of energy that was coming from me that was even more enhanced within my clairvoyance and things than before. And she was acting as my early guide at that time. She served me and was always there and I could sense her energy when I was connecting with people's loved ones. And even in meditation that I would go and she would meet me at these great big gates and take me into the dimensional energies of the realms. And she would stand there within like this very beautiful lilac looking dress with beautiful, beautiful lilac wings, believe it or not. And I could always remember that wherever she stood, there was a large rainbow behind her, you know, like not a very solid rainbow, just a very light, mystic rainbow. And it was such a beautiful thing. And I felt that I had more connection with my nan on a spiritual form as a guy than I had with them experiences of being a young lad and not really knowing my nan the well as way that I did. So it was quite beautiful to have her as this guiding feel. But yeah, so for me, really, Oliver, it was a natural process. It was a scary time. I didn't understand it. I didn't know nothing about, you know, mediumship and nobody else in the family spoke about the you know, anything other in the family about mediumship. We didn't come from a spiritual or religious background. So it was quite, you know, weird that I was this one that had it. But what I didn't realise is that my grandmother was a clairvoyant. And apparently she didn't work as a full-time clairvoyant, but she used to read the tea leaves and apparently she was very, very good. So I suppose in some respects, the reason why she came forward and guided me because she had the knowledge to impart down to me. So it obviously skipped a generation from her son down to her grandson.
Well, that's really interesting to hear that and hear how it kind of, would you say, kind of really sort of awakened the whole thing in you, although it was there already, but it just kind of accelerated that even more.
I think the way it accelerated it is the fact that I felt comfortable that my grandmother was there, and I think that helped. It gave me that sense of reassurance that I was protected within that field, that I could go forward, that I wasn't going to get hurt or haunted or hurt by these energies. Mm. And from what I'd already experienced was that nothing was there was going to hurt me. Mm. I just think it's the fear of the unknown. And when we're children, we do understand that we don't understand, if that makes sense. And I think that within that reassurance of having that grandmother so solidly around you within an energy, really gave that journey a big boost, because I knew for me that it was something that I was going to be protected by.
Well, it's very interesting to hear all that. Thank you for that. We just wanted to move on now and sort of ask you more about your sort of television work you've done in the past. You've told us that you've worked for Psychic Interactive TV in the past. What sort of stuff did you get up to on there?
Well, I'll tell you how that come about to start with. I mean, you know, I've been working as a, you know, I mean, I wasn't doing this as a full-time job. I'd been doing this all my life, and yeah, I would do some private readings now and then for groups and people. And in 2008, I'll tell you, this was an amazing story. I can remember being made redundant. I was a landscape gardener at that time, and work was very hard, and times weren't good around that sort of time. And I fell out of my work and got made redundant. The firm went bust, basically. And I can remember going down to basically what you do, sign on, get your stamp paid. And I can remember walking down the day, literally the day I got made redundant in the morning, I walked past this new holistic shop. And the new holistic shop I walked into, I was looking at the crystals and feeling quite down on my luck at that moment, because I just obviously lost my job. And the lovely lady behind the counter who owned the shop, Carolyn, she said to me, what crystals are you drawn to? I said, all of them. I'm a medium. And she said, really, are you? She said, I'd love a reading from you. So I gave her a reading. She went, oh, my God, I must have you working in my shop. So one thing led to another. I started working in the shop and helping with that. And I decided that I thought, well, this is the way to go. And I thought at that point, I'll go self-employed. And that's what I did. And things really got well advanced within that. And I met a lot of people that was connected with the shop, and where I come across my good friend, Robin Lowne, who's the master palmist, who's worked with the London College of Psychic Studies, still does to this day as a lecturer, and he's one of the best palmists I've ever come across in my time. And Robin was there, and a lovely woman called Carolyn, who was a colour expert therapist, aura workshops and things that she did. Anyway, the story was is that Caroline, she got an email or something for an interview for Psychic TV in London. And she said, oh, I'm not going to go because they don't want to pay my fare. So I thought, well, okay. I said, well, can I have their number? I'll give them a call. And I gave them a call. And they said, yeah, okay, are you willing to come up for an interview? And they were based up at Great Portland Street in London at that time, and right next door to Radio 1. And I walked up there and I had the interview. And the most amazing thing was I had this interview with this young boss manager of the show. He was about 26, and he sat me down. He said, right, okay, you're just going to read for me now. Put me on the spot and said, right, there's an A4 piece of paper. I'm going to write down all the notes that you give me. And I gave him, without going into detail, so much validation on stuff. And I brought his mother through that was unfortunately took her own life through being a drug user. And obviously at that time I'm bringing through all this energy. I'm thinking, oh my God, mother, drug user. I hope that spirit are giving me all this correct. And at the end of it, he said that it was the most amazing reading, and his mother and everything that I'd given was absolutely spot on. And he said, right, okay. And at that point, he never gave me the job. He said, right, okay, I'm not going to say anything at that moment. I'm not going to say, yes, you've got the job or anything. So he said, we will get in contact with you in a few days. Let you know. Anyway, a week went by, and I actually emailed them and said, oh, is there any news on a possible knowledge of where I'm going to be with this? And I had that feeling, being psychic, that I knew that this was going to be big somewhere. And I thought, well, it feels weird because I feel a good feeling with this, but I'm not getting nothing come back. Anyway, Benji, who was the boss, he got back to me and he said to me, Grant, sorry, she's been so busy with stuff and a lot going on with the studio at the moment. He said, I just have completely not got around to getting back to you. So he said, I do apologise. We want you for a second interview.
Right.
He said, but what you're going to be doing is if you be interviewed by my other main manager and main producer of the show, a guy called Mo. Now, Mo, obviously, what a character, and he's somebody that I could go talk on about forever. But I come to the second interview, and there was a girl from Brighton come up with me, and she was at the interview. We were waiting outside, and we went in, and Mo interviewed us both. And basically, we were in there for about 2-3 minutes, and he introduced himself, and he said, Grant, can you please go outside? I'm going to interview this lady first, then I'm going to come to you. So he said, go and have a cigarette out on the street or something. So I said, okay, that's fine, I'll go and have a cigarette. Well, literally, I hadn't even got the lighter out of my pocket to light my cigarette. And this girl walked past me and said, oh, good luck, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, Mo opens the door and goes, she hasn't got the job. Right, come in. He said, he sat me down, Oliver, and he said to me, oh my God, I've been waiting for this moment for like nearly over a week now. And I went, well, what do you mean? He said, I've been speaking to Benji. He told me what you did with the reading. He said, I want a reading from you. Anyway, one thing led to another, and I brought his uncle through that unfortunately had been shot in either a war or a situation. And he just burst out in tears. He said to me, oh my God, and I gave him, and I tried to pronounce his uncle's name. He was like, oh my God, that's his name. And he just couldn't believe it. And he said, I want you on my first show. You've got to be the man that's on my show. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay. He said, look, I can't tell you when you're going to be scheduling, but we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Well, that next following day, they said, right, okay, is the 16th of March okay for you to start the show? It's going to be a Saturday night. And I said, yeah. I said, that's really ironic. He said, why? I said, that's my birthday. And he went, okay. I said, oh, the universe is working with me, eh? Mm-hmm. Nice birthday present. Mm-hmm. So the funny situation with that, and this is probably tied in with a bit of a funny story, really. The funny situation with that was that I got there on the show, and I worked with two other psychics. We used to work on a rotation system. So two people would go into a booth taking calls. One would be on the desk with the presenter, and we would go on a rotation system, about 20 minutes each on the desk taking text messages or voicemail messages from callers just asking questions. Mm-hmm. And this particular night, the actual system had gone down. So we weren't able to take text messages from and put them up on screen because something down at Canary Wharf had gone wrong. They couldn't even show the at-home psychics that used to sit in a little box in the corner. So they were just blank boxes. So I'm sitting there, very first time in front of the camera, and my manager and producer, main producer at that time, Mo, he says to me, Grant, got some bad news. I went, what do you mean? He said, we can't bring any text or anything. You're going to have to take a live call. And I went, whoa, that's on the spot. Mm. Somewhere I got a feeling that the universe and spirit were intervening with this somewhere. So anyway, what happened was is that I had this guy phone up, this guy called Paul. I can remember it as plain as anything. Mm-hmm. Sounded very sort of London-y, Kent, Essex accent. And I gave him this reading and I said to him that I could see him in this van with a roll of carpet that sticks through the front of this van. And I could see a man on the other side and this big Alsatian dog. And he said, shut up. He said to me, do you know me? And I went, no. He said to me, well, I'm a carpet fitter with my dad, and that's his dog that comes with us. He's like, I can't believe that. Oh. So I said, well, look, you know, okay, that's just a little validation so I know that I'm in your energy. I said, but the biggest message is that I want to tell you that your wife loves you. And he paused for 1 minute. And you could hear this emotion in his voice come back and go, oh, my God. I said, you haven't been getting on very well for the last year, have you? He said, how do you know this stuff? And I said, well, you've been married 3 years, haven't you? He said, yeah, just 3 years. He said, and the thing is with it, he said, my wife hasn't told me she loved me until this morning for the first time in a year. I said, well, can I just give you one thing off the back of this, Paul? He said, please do. I said, you've just booked a holiday and you need this holiday, the pair of you. You both need a break. I said, sometimes relationships can be hard. I said, sometimes the monotony of life can get to us a little bit and it can put pressure into our own lives. I said, but you've just booked a holiday. He said, yes, I have. I said, you're going away on the 26th of September. And he went, you are absolutely kidding me.
Exact right date. Now. Well, yeah.
He said, that's when we're going away on the 26th of that time. So he just could not believe it. He was like, oh my God. And my producers in the background were going, yes!
Nailed yes. it.
Yeah. And you could tell yeah. why, because suddenly we had a stat board of we could see what was coming in of phone calls coming into the show. And then suddenly the stat board just went off the scale.
Crazy, yeah.
And my producer was like, no, keep him on the desk. We don't want to get rid of this guy. So I sat on the desk for about an hour and a half for the first show that I was there doing these live readings. And after that show, the producers sat down and looked back at the show and the bosses, and they nicknamed me Mr. Validator. Mm-hmm. And that became my name, Grant Collier, Mr. Validator on the show. Mm-hmm. And the show was an amazing platform. I worked around some amazing people on the show.
Sounds great,
in different varieties and forms as well. You know, we're talking runestone readers, we're talking, you know, clairvoyance, we're talking so many different
areas. Lots of different types. That's astounding, you know, story and fantastic to hear that. That's brilliant. Well, we're going to go into a break now. We're having a great chat here with Grant Collier, Universal Psychic Medium, and we're going to hear more from Grant after this.
This is Psychic Social, where the world's best psychics tell you their story.
We hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Psychic Social is brought to you by psychic.co.uk. Now, psychic.co.uk is the latest content hub for all things psychic. At psychic.co.uk, you can learn detailed information about every single tarot card in the deck. There's a page for every single one, 78 pages, and you can directly book psychic readings with some of the UK's best-loved psychics and read great articles written by them too. You can also check out all our other podcasts on the Psychic Social page on the website. So lots of fantastic stuff to get stuck into there at the website. Our amazing tarot course is also coming to psychic.co.uk very soon too, so keep a lookout for that. If you have any questions or queries about the website or Psychic Social, you can email them to us at support@psychic.co.uk. And one of our lovely team will get back to you. Now, back to the show.
This is Psychic Social, the spiritual home of psychics.
Welcome back to part two of Psychic Social and our chat with Universal Psychic Medium, Grant Collier. Obviously, you know, we've been hearing about your mediumship so far throughout the show. Can you tell us about your guide or guides? I mean, we kind of ask every psychic that comes on the show, how many do you have? Do you have one or many? And how do they work with you or for you?
Well, for me, I have many guides like everybody else does. Everybody's got many guides. And a lot of the guides we probably won't even work with, but they are there in different levels. And even guided figures, as i.e. like family that have passed over to the other side. My main guide is Michael. And Michael is a character, and I've been with Michael. Michael's probably been with me now in this life. He's been with me for around about 26, 27 years now. It was a really weird thing when Michael came into my zone, because I went through a stage of what we call folding. Now, what does that mean? It means that there was a stage in my mediumship when, for about 6 months, where I felt that I was losing my gift. I suddenly felt like I lost connection with spirit. And that may well have been through personal stuff that was going on around my life, but I did feel that lack of connection. And my grandmother was around me a lot of that time before Michael stepped in. And I didn't even feel my grandmother's connection there. So one day I woke up and I could hear this male voice in my ear. And I went, who are you? And he said, I'm Michael. And I went, okay, who are you, Michael? He said, well, I'm your guide. And I'm here to, you know, we've lived together in many lives. You've been me, I've been you, we are as one, and we've experienced life together. And I was like, okay. Now, I obviously didn't know, he didn't give me everything at that point. I learned a lot about Michael over the years and how he works and how he is. But I know one of the lives that we had together was one during the times of Christ, where we had been together, that we followed that sort of leadership. We weren't the main disciples, but what we were was in a following of that energy. But we were also alongside the energy of the crucifixion of what happened at that time. So many of the followers and supporters of Jesus was crucified as well. And I know that Michael said to me he was crucified with Jesus alongside me for prophesying over the energy of what we sort of talk about now. And these beliefs of something beyond this life. And Michael, I always said to Michael, well, what do you look like? And he showed himself to me one day, and he looks like a very young Matthew Kelly. Okay, so remember Matthew Kelly from years ago, you know, stars in their eyes. When he was younger, around in his 20s, 30s, he's about 6'5". He wears a long golden robe, but he has the most amazing ability for every area, teaching, protection. I use him not just within this work, I use him within the paranormal side of things as well, and I use him for protecting and shutting down certain stuff that we use during the paranormal stuff, like Ouija boards and things like that, which Ouija boards are just a divination board, really. And, you know, I think they're probably overemphasized about how negative they are. If you use them the right way, they're fine.
Sure.
But Michael will shut all that down. He will also protect people that will be overcome by spirit's energy, because even... You know, when I'm working with teams, we get customers come in and people will be overtaken by the energy. Normally they feel a bit nauseous, or they feel a little bit lightheaded, or they don't feel their self. And I will take them out. Well, I say Michael will take them out because he uses me to take them out. And then he takes that energy away and protects them with loads of gold light. He's an amazing character. He's very funny. He's very cheeky. But he's all about getting to the core energy of a situation. So, for instance, if he's looking at situations around work, relationship, family situations, he will work not just to say, oh, well, you need to do this, need to do that. He'll just dissect what's happened, make that person look at what's happened and how they can guide their energy to understand the person that they're with, for one, i.e. as a relationship, how that might be that person might have been before they come into their life. So they've got an understanding of who that person is before you judge the energy of how that person is within it and how you can relate that to make it work, if that's possible. And also within the energy of like career as well. You know, what was it? Yeah, you know, Michael might pick up on what it was that person might have wanted to do when they never left school, but schooling took them into another area and they fell into a job that they didn't like. So Michael's very good at looking at the areas of where people are with their best attributes, so he can guide them if they've been stirred off the wrong direction, if that makes sense, in life. So he's very good at looking at that and making people understand. Now, he like any guide says, you know, even other mediums' guides that I've spoken to and clairvoyants over the years, you know, spirit aren't there to tell you what to do. Life is about choice. They can only guide you to knowing and knowledge of what that person knows. For instance, when Michael's coming into a situation, he's there to tell that person that there is an option, because you can see from the experiences that they've worked for that person in the past and they may have deterred that energy. So he will direct them in the best possible way. Yes, he will give validation. He will show things on that energy. And he's also very much the person that will coordinate a bit of decorum on the other side. Because before Michael came in, even though I had my grandmother, I used to get a lot of mixed messages from loved ones in spirit. I might have four or five spirits trying to talk to me at once. So imagine how many people, imagine that I'm standing in an auditorium of 500 people and everybody wants a reading from their loved one. Imagine how many people on the other side wanting to get that message back.
Yeah.
And Michael would basically be that security guard and make that orderly fashion happen. So I have no control over that. Michael is the one that does that. So Michael is the one that's able to hold back that energy and bring the energy that's most needed first to the person in the audience. So, you know, he is very much the man that I rely on very dearly. And a lot of his work, a lot of his work is channeled through me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always say, look, this isn't about me. I'm just the telephone call. Michael is the one that's doing the work, and he's also the one that's allowing that telephone call to come from a loved one on the other side. Mm-hmm. So he's a massive energy there, one, to protect me so I don't wear myself out, and he mm-hmm. can shut me down naturally. Because before Michael came into my life, I had to shut down myself. I had to protect myself with gold light and do that. And that took a long time to do. Naturally, now I can just click on, click off. Mm-hmm. With Michael being there, he'll just shut me down naturally. That's it. He'll push spirit back, and I go, that's it, Michael. I'm not working now. I don't want any spirit around me at the moment. And he'll do that. He'll shut that right off.
But, sure.
You know, but that connection with Michael and that trust in that energy between us took a good 10 years, really. Mm. To understand each other on a level. He's somebody you still got to build that trust up with. And now, you know, I even trust Michael to the point where he even tells me stuff about my own personal life that comes up and warns me of stuff. And I have to go, is that me or is that Mike? Because it's very easy for your own feelings to come into play around situations, especially where love's concerned. But when Michael's validated the stuff that he's given to me with his warnings, he shows me he's there for me on every level. So Michael is a very wise soul. Like I said, he is part of me and I'm part of him. We've entered many lives together. And if I couldn't probably, I'd lose count over the energy of 30 lives that we've lived together. And that is beyond this planet. So we have worked in other dimensional universes, planets, galaxies within that journey.
This is what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you about you know, where is Michael and in what dimension is he in, or is he on an astral plane, or where does he sit?
Michael sits in every dimension within the universe. So it's hard for us humans to get our head around, because when we're working on this, we're working above the fifth dimensional energy. When we've got these higher beings, and that's what Michael is a higher being, and no different maybe to when I come back or leave this earth plane, I will go on to be a higher being, and he may come and join that part energy into a new life. Because when we're reincarnated, we don't come back as a soul, one soul energy. We come back as part of an energy to learn something new. Now, even though he's a higher conscious spirit and he has a lot of understanding about what's going on, it's a bit like how they talk about the Kabbalah. You learn so much in one area of life, then you go on to learn more than what we would know within these physical life dimensions. But Michael's in multi-dimensions, so he's in different astral planes, if that makes sense. So he's drifting around in the universe and picking up on many different facets of the energy of this multiple universe. And when we talk about the universe is multi-dimensional, so that it goes beyond multi-universe. And that's why I always talked about me being the universal medium, because I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about Michael. Michael is the universal medium. I am part of his energy, so I'm not actually the universal medium, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because if you took Michael away from the situation, I wouldn't have a bloody clue.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
Because the thing is with it, this is Michael talking and not me.
So you say you're effectively kind of channeling him
through you. I am channeling him. With everything that I do on a message to get out to people in certain respects. So he will let me talk about where my experience is and what's happened. But when it comes into talking about where he is, he tells me that your brain wouldn't even comprehend the energy of where he is, because he's everywhere at once. Mm.
Well, it's very interesting to hear all that stuff about your guide and all that information. Absolutely fascinating. This is just part one of this two-part special. We're very much looking forward to catching up with Grant again in the second part, which will be very soon. We've much more to chat with him about, including the lowdown on Grant's readings for some very famous pop stars. So keep a lookout or an ear out for that, Psychic Social listeners. That just leaves me to say it's been fantastic to have you on the show today, Grant. Thank you again so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure to be on the show, and I thank you for this exposure.
Thank you, Grant. Take care.
Thank you. You take care.
Thanks for joining us on Psychic Social from psychic.co.uk, the spiritual home of psychics.